Okay, we're now being recorded. So, slide three talks about the background, and this is just the general background of why this is important. Basically, that laboratory services are an essential component for healthcare systems. But beyond that, I would say, you know, that there's a need for laboratory services and analyses, which goes beyond healthcare and supports public health, both specifically and public health very broadly. Over time, as we talk today about this, you'll see that we've moved somewhat from talking about individual laboratories to laboratory systems. And this is another way in which the core functions document has evolved. So the focus has broadened out over time to reflect this acknowledgement that it's truly laboratory systems that we're talking about that are necessary to provide laboratory services. Slide four talks about some historic documents, which I wanted to just mention because they are really an important foundation and in many respects led up to the creation of the core functions document. So back in 1988, which seems like a long time ago, and I guess it is 27 years ago, so it's a fair time back, the Institute of Medicine, which you may know is an arm of the National Academy of Science, which is that independent body that advises Congress on matters of health importance, they wrote a report called The Future of Public Health. And in that report, there were a number of things which were identified. One was about the need to really better define what public health is, and the definition that they narrowed it down to is essentially public health is what we do as a society to create the conditions in which people can be healthy. So that's the definition as given by the Institute of Medicine. But the other important component of that report, which plays into today's discussion, is that they identified the three core functions of public health. And the three core functions of public health, as identified in the Institute of Medicine report in 1988, were assessment. So public health is responsible for assessing the health of a population, however that's defined. Policy development. So public health is responsible for developing policies that are necessary and important for addressing the problems that were detected in the assessment. And assurance is the third component or core function. So assessment, policy development, and assurance. If you think about it, and if you look at some of the graphics that have been developed around this, and I'm sorry I didn't think to include one in this talk, it shows that this is a continuous cycle, obviously, where we assess, we develop policies, we assure that those policies are doing what we want to, and then there's a feedback to make sure that we're continuously addressing the needs of society. Well, those three core functions are fine, and those of us, I think, who are in public health can appreciate what that means and how that works. But it was felt that it was necessary to translate those core functions into something that are identified as the 10 essential public health services. So there was a group put together with CDC and other organizations at the helm, and in 1994, 6 years later, they published, Dr. Ed Baker was the lead author, a publication called The 10 Essential Public Health Services. This, I think, for anybody particularly outside of public health, more clearly delineated what it is that public health does beyond this kind of broad, overarching set of core functions. The 10 Essential Services got down to much more specifics about what public health is and what it does. It was during the 90s that there was a certain discussion going on nationally about how important it is to have public health laboratories, or is it important to have public health laboratories, if they're providing analytical services, why can't we just have those analytical services be provided by any contract laboratory? And so I think the discussion then broadened out in the 90s to say that, well, public health laboratories are more than just a provider of analytical services. And in fact, public health laboratories are only part of a larger system which actually meets the needs of public health. And Joe McDade and Jim Hughes published an article in 1998 which said the U.S. needs a national laboratory system. And by that they meant not that we needed to have a federalized system, which some people thought it's what they meant, where everyone worked under, say, CDC. That's not what they were saying. They were saying what we need to have is an acknowledgement that many components of laboratories feed into what is necessary for good public health. And so they said all of these components, whether it's FDA laboratories, CDC laboratories, NIH laboratories, state public health laboratories, clinical laboratories, agricultural laboratories, all of those feed into a system which actually supports the needs of the United States. That's what they were saying was a national laboratory system. Go to the next slide. When we see that now APHL was obviously involved in many of these discussions during the 90s, and APHL was saying, and actually it started back about the time I think that Dr. Hughes and Dr. McDade published that document, that APHL said we really need to delineate what it is that public health laboratories do. Beyond the core functions of public health, beyond the essential services of public health, beyond this kind of broad concept of a national laboratory system, what is it that public health laboratories, and at that time we were defining, we were restricting the discussion to state public health laboratories, what is it that they do? And there was a group, a committee within APHL that I sat on. I think it was chaired by Dr. John Counts, if I recall correctly, that put together the first document, which, as I said, was called the Core Functions and Capabilities of State Public Health Laboratories. Now, with the exception of Dr. Mike Skeels from Oregon, who always said we should have found a way to reduce this to 10, he thought it was very weird that we had 11 core functions instead of 10 core functions, but we thought it was distinctive, so we have 11 core functions. So those 11 core functions, and which have basically have stayed the same. So if you look up the core functions now with the 2014 version, those same 11 core functions exist in this document as existed in 2000. This white paper, which was then presented to the membership of APHL, stating, this is what we want to state public health laboratories do. These 11 things constitute in their entirety the extent of what public health laboratories do. And we APHL, actually voted on that, and I think it was the first time ever that we came up with a public policy statement which we unanimously agreed represented what public health laboratories do. Next slide, I think. So that document, as nice as it was and as formal as it was just that, was a document of APHL. And with our colleagues at CDC, we said this needs to be more formally introduced into the peer-reviewed literature. And so we did exactly that. We took that core functions document, and we put together a publication or a proposal for a paper in the Maternal Mortality Weekly Report that CDC publishes, and published it in 2002 under the title Core Functions and Capabilities of State Public Health Laboratories, a report of APHL. So that was our statement publicly, that this is what public health laboratories are all about. In 2010, we actually made some modifications, and the reason we made some modifications is because the the discussion during the years 2002 to 2010 really expanded around public health laboratory systems. And we actually moved towards having a public health reports, which was put out, I think, in around 2010, which talked about public health laboratory systems. Again, the acknowledgement based on what Drs. McDade and Hughes had said in 1998, public health laboratories really deal with others who provide laboratory services, and it's the system, these systems, that really ultimately are what are collectively responsible. So the 2010 version or update of the core functions reflected those migration towards talking about laboratory systems. More recently, then, the discussion has gone further, and that is to look at the public health laboratories at the local level. So local public health laboratories as well as state public health laboratories. We looked at whether or not there is a separate set of core functions for locals, and it was determined in the group that put the 2014 version or edition of this document together, the ultimate decision was that no, there really isn't. It's not that every local health department is going to be involved in all 11 core functions. And in fact, looking back in time, it's the case that not every state laboratory is involved in all of these 11 core functions. The 11 core functions were never meant to be a scorecard, if you will. It says if you're not doing all 11 of these, you're not a good laboratory. Rather, it was intended to be a broad kind of overarching statement of what the functions are in any public health setting. So 2014 actually then further expanded the document, and the major change on the cover, if you will, was that we removed the modifier state. So now we do talk about this as being the core functions of public health laboratories. That is the latest version and the way it's put together. If we look at slide 7, this actually outlines what are those core functions. Now, we've repeatedly said in the document and here too that we're not trying to prioritize what these 11 core functions are, and we've never attempted to do that. We're basically saying that they're all important and valuable activities. These are also, it's important to note, these are never, were never intended to be a list of analytical capabilities, because the contention is and the position is that public health laboratory core functions go beyond doing analyses. That's only a part of what public health laboratories do. So the first area, the first function, involves supporting disease prevention, control, and surveillance activities. And this is pretty classic. I think, and all of us think about this and know about this from working in public health laboratories, that this is kind of our bread and butter, if you will, and goes way back to the very beginning of public health laboratories. We also, or public health laboratories, also serve as a repository for data and how that data is collected, processed, managed, and integrated. That's another important function of public health laboratory systems. Reference and specialized testing, another kind of classic activity within public health laboratory world. When you have a problem or a challenge and you need a further identification or workup or confirmation from a clinical laboratory, it often goes up to the public health laboratory system at the local level, state level, and then ultimately sometimes to CDC. This area kind of got further emphasized, I would say, after 2001 and the anthrax outbreak or episode, and we moved into areas of reference and specialized testing, specifically around agents of bioterrorism. Environmental health and protection is the fourth area, and this is an area which historically has been handled in different parts of state governments and local governments. Sometimes it's in the same agency as the classic public health, sometimes it's not. But the position here is that the public health laboratory system has a role here. Whether or not it's organizational, there's a role and a need for this to be kind of included in the overall listing of core functions. Food safety is another one that's similar in that different organizations, different jurisdictions will have food safety responsibilities sometimes in a separate agency, sometimes in the public health agency. But that's not to suggest that the public health laboratory arena shouldn't, in fact, be very much involved in this area. Laboratory improvement and regulation is an identified area, and this varies tremendously from state to state because sometimes laboratory improvement and oversight and regulation is, again, handled by a regulatory body, not necessarily by the state public health laboratory. But it's the position here that the public health laboratory and the people within that system should be involved with and connected to and have impact on the whole process of laboratory improvement and regulation. Policy development the same way. So there are a number of public health policies that come out of state, local, and even national levels of public health, and the laboratory community has a role, particularly when those policies have an impact on or in fact involve laboratory services. So policy development or the influence of policy really is another function. Emergency response, this is a direct result, I would say, but even before 2001, because these were written before 2001, there was already an anticipation of something like that maybe happening, some enhanced activities with respect to the public health laboratory community, and that the public health laboratory community needed to be prepared to be involved in emergency response. Public health-related research is an area where some public health laboratories and public health laboratory systems have a much bigger role than other places. Again, this is never intended to be a listing of must-bes rather than what could be or should be's. Some public health laboratory systems are heavily involved in research and not necessarily bench-level research. It could be bench-level research. It could be evaluative research. It could be clinical applications research. It could be product review research. It could be systems and services research. It could be any number of things. But the important thing is that public health laboratories have a role here or should have a role here. Training and education, traditionally, again, an area of responsibility. Even though we have had a number of historical involvements of organizations like CDC, NLTN, APHL, ASCP, ASM, and others, the public health laboratory community really has and should have a continued role in training and education. And then finally, something which I think was the 11th one that kind of has spurred on some activities around supporting this idea and concept of laboratory systems, the idea of partnerships and communication, that the laboratory, the public health laboratory, and all of its partners.
Congratulations.
So the public health laboratory should be, in fact, part of this kind of linkage of different participants and components of systems. That actually, I think, led to the idea of LSIP, which is the next slide. And so the under LSIP, the Laboratory System Improvement Program, takes into account the 11 core functions and then looks at them relative to their relationship to the 10 essential public health services that I talked about that were published back in 1994. If we look at the next slide, number 9, we see how the essential services and the laboratory core functions connect. We first published on this about 7 years ago when we put a paper together for the American Public Health Association meeting to show that the 11 core functions and what laboratories do directly impacts and supports the 10 essential services. And the LSIP process builds on that and looks at that, function by function, service by service. That goes on to the next slide, number 10. So there really isn't any place, any part of public health which doesn't have some reliance, some dependence, some underpinning associated with laboratory core functions. I know that there was a report once in the healthcare side of things where it was stated once that 75% of all personal healthcare decisions are based at least in part on laboratory findings. What I've never been able to kind of assess and would be interesting to do even in a theoretical way is what percentage of public health decisions, policy decisions, in fact rely in part, at least in part, on laboratory-generated data and information. I would submit that it's a significant amount. So in conjunction with all of this, now we're going to step back to 2000. And many of you, I presume, have heard about and know about the Healthy People process. Healthy People, this kind of national plan for public health, dates back to the late 70s when Dr. Julius Richmond, the Surgeon General at the time, said we really need to be more attentive to how we establish priorities and goals and objectives for public health, how we measure our progress, and then how we modify that plan going forward. So during the 80s, there was kind of a trial period for Healthy People. And then during the 90s, there was Healthy People 2000, the first such document, which was put out in 1990. What was realized by the end of that decade was within that document, Healthy People 2000, there was never a mention as to what kind of public health infrastructure one needed to be successful in reaching these goals and objectives. And so when the Healthy People 2010 came out, there had been a proposal to include a workforce or infrastructure objective which states exactly what this states now: increase the proportion of tribal and state public health agencies that provide or assure comprehensive laboratory services to support essential public health services. So this came out in Healthy People 2010, which was released in the year 2000. And obviously APHL was instrumental in putting together the language to ensure that this objective was included. And then for those of you who may or may not follow the Healthy People process very much, there are two different kinds of goals that are included, or objectives rather, that are included in Healthy People. One is something that's called a measurable objective, where you have a known method and process for measuring progression towards the objective. And then there's something called developmental objectives. Well, this one was a developmental objective because neither we nor anybody else knew how were we going to measure comprehensive laboratory services in support of the essential public health services. So APHL then at that time decided to, this we can go on to the next slide, number 12. APHL decided to say, okay, well, since the comprehensive laboratory, or rather the comprehensive or essential public health services require support of laboratories, and since the 11 core functions are shown to be directly connected and very directly supportive of the essential services, public health services, then if we create a survey that measures the extent to which laboratories or laboratory systems fulfill the core functions, then that's in fact a measure of providing comprehensive laboratory services. We wanted to get away from the idea that laboratory services were strictly analyses. We wanted to make sure everyone knew that laboratory services consist of the full range of functions as described in the core functions document. So in 2004, we did put out our first survey, the Comprehensive Laboratory Services Survey, or CLSS, and that survey has been now distributed every 2 years between 2004 to just recently, correct, I believe, Tina? So we're just now, I think, in the process of collecting the data from 2014. And we've been able to track to what extent laboratories are, in fact, fulfilling the core functions. So the core functions document has been useful in that respect. If we look at the next slide, slide number 13, this objective is now a part of Healthy People 2020, and in fact, the previous objective is also still part of Healthy People 2020. But this new objective, again, recognized the changing conversation and the evolution of thinking around laboratory services, saying that really it's these laboratory systems, whether at the state, tribal, or local level, which are supporting the 10 essential services. And we need to measure the way in which those systems are, in fact, working at a high level of quality in support of the 10 essential public health services. So again, we were faced with a new developmental objective, and we were faced with how do we measure this? Well, fortunately, I think because APHL had already been working on the whole LSIP process, and because the LSIP process actually does look at ways in which laboratory systems support the 10 essential public health services, then we were able to use that LSIP listing of ways in which systems contribute to the 10 essential services as the basis for our public health laboratory systems survey. This has been distributed, I believe, now twice. And so we're at the beginnings of this process. We don't have as much data, but it still builds on the same kind of concept of core functions and support of the 10 essential public health services. As you can see on slide 14, the public health laboratory system survey is now in process as well, and we hope to use this as the means of assessing public health laboratory services performance going forward. So that is kind of the basis for, you know, many of these things, and this is kind of the history of how the core functions document came into existence and how it's been used, I think, to look at public health laboratories in a couple of different ways. In slide 15, we can see that this document is very helpful when people are going through things like LSIP or other partnership meetings, because even today, this is 15 years later, when you talk about what public health laboratories are and what they do and the systems within which they operate, what they are and what they do, people in the clinical world, the agricultural world, the veterinary world, the provider world, the epidemiology world, don't necessarily have a full appreciation of what is entailed, and this document actually can help educate them. I believe that I was given 40 minutes and I took about 33. So I think at this point, Tina, if it's okay, we can open the phone up for questions.
Absolutely. Thank you for your presentation. That was
sure.
A really good overview. So if anyone has any questions, this is the time to ask them.
How many people are on the line? About 20?
Let me see. We had about 33
okay.
People.
From states and local health departments, or?
I can only see telephone numbers at this time.
Okay.
So, but we did have a mix when I looked through the registrations. Back to slide 15, where you were talking about using this document at partner meetings. I wanted to offer. that I do have hard copies of the core functions document, so if you have a meeting that you feel like this would be a really good thing to hand out or, and educate your partners, please send me an email and how many copies you want and an address to send this to, and I can get that out in the mail with no problem. So I wanted to put the offer out there.
Hi, this is Jill Power from New Hampshire. I just had Bert, that was a wonderful presentation because it helped define and clarify the difference between the core functions and the essential services and where they integrate with one another, and especially knowing that the LSIP is a great way to measure any progress in improving those areas. You mentioned that this document has gone from the state to local and possibly in the future to tribal. Have you had any luck with any of the tribal communities?
Just within the last couple of months, we've been able to work with a regional tribal group in the Great Lakes to look at the core functions and to try to help the community see the core functions apply to what they are doing and what they see themselves as doing. I think even though we think of state public health laboratories as being diverse in the way that they're put together, probably local public health laboratories are even more diverse, and I would say within the tribal community maybe even yet more diverse. And so many tribal laboratories, I believe, are still engaged a lot in clinical testing. And so even though I think there might be a real need for identification of public health functions, core functions, this may be helpful going forward as we work with them to see how it can apply to their needs as well. So we're in the very elementary stages of some working with tribal agencies.
Okay, thank you. And I hope if anyone on the line, I think, has any ideas on how to reach out to those communities, they can perhaps contact you or Tina.
That'd be wonderful. Yep.
This is Beth in Iowa. Dr. Wilkie, it's so nice. This was a great presentation, and I wanted to thank you so much. We just had an LSIP here in Iowa a couple weeks ago. We used this document, the core functions, as a great guide in helping us prepare and get ready with our partners. And now there's a review going on for our laboratory from the University of Iowa, and I think this could be very beneficial for them to help better understand us as they're, you know, trying to review everything that we do and the complexity and all that. So it was very beneficial for me to sit and listen and reflect today as you talked about all these things.
Well, thank you. It's nice to hear your voice.
Yeah, it's
look
great
forward to
hear
seeing
from
you. Are you going to be in Indianapolis?
Yes, you will.
I'll see you there then.
Yes.
I'm glad you had a good experience with the LSIP process in
Absolutely.
Iowa.
Absolutely. And I feel like it was so timely for us here, and now that we're having this big review from the university, I think that the information from that and these core functions, all of this combined, is going to be so helpful for us to provide them information and for them to look at feedback from our partners and stuff. So it's, and just with some of the things you were saying today, it helps me really reflect and maybe some information I should be sharing with them.
Well, that's great. That's nice to hear. When I think about what was the conversation back in the 90s, and within the APHL circles, we spent a lot of time kind of talking about, woe is us, nobody understands what public health laboratories do. And then I think we finally realized that rather than feel sorry for ourselves, we should be a little bit more assertive and explain to people what public health laboratories do. And so we started down this pathway, which I think has been a very productive one.
Absolutely. I think it's amazing. And you've been certainly a leader that's helped us accomplish all these things. So thank you.
Thanks, Beth.
Hi, Bert. This is Deb Severson from Fairfax, and I want to join in with everybody else to tell you this was a wonderful presentation. It's also very timely for us because we will be doing our LSIP here in Fairfax on May 29th, and we will be using these documents, so it was very timely for us. I do have one question on slide 14 when you talked about the Public Health Laboratory System Survey.
Yes.
And I noticed on the presentation that it's only going out to state public health labs at this point.
Right.
Can you speak to when it will be, so the group could understand if and when it will be included to locals and tribals?
Well, I think this, too, is one of those things which is kind of evolving. I think just as we have kind of been slowly kind of expanding the sphere to go from states to local to tribals, and not only in the core functions document, but in the surveys that are measuring the performance in these areas, it will come. I think it's in a form of progression right now. I can't tell you when it's going to happen, but I think we are moving in that direction.
Thank you.
This is Tina. So it was sent out to locals in the fall. I just made a mistake on the slides.
Oh, it's kind of a...
It was a pilot.
Right, it's a pilot. I'm sorry as well. I've forgotten that as well.
It was a pilot, and we would have liked to have more locals participate in that, so I'm hoping in the next round we'll have a lot more interest and participation on that survey.
I think, frankly, to get higher participation on surveys, and surveys can be time-consuming, as we all know, no matter how beneficial they are, but one almost has to market the survey and market how the benefit of the survey and the findings of the survey can be used in a positive way. So we still have some work to do there.
This is Travis in San Diego County. Thanks, Dr. Whoopi. This is a good presentation. And on slides 9 and 10, I thought were really good relating the core functions to the essential services. And I was wondering if there is any other documents with either more details on those or examples of how those interrelate, especially in regard to public health agency accreditation.
Public health agency accreditation?
Yes.
Okay. So... Well, a couple of things. One is, as you mentioned that, it reminds me that we never have put, I don't think we ever put that, maybe Tina can correct me or somebody else online, I don't think we ever put that into the peer-reviewed literature. We did put it into a presentation of the national meeting, and we've talked about that, but I don't think we ever did that, even in the supplements. Did we, Tina?
I don't recall.
I think that if we did not, which I don't think we did, it's probably time that we did do that. So I think having a more expanded discussion of how the 10 essential services and the 11 core functions intersect would be a good thing and could be the source of even a review article for one of those, perhaps the next time we have a laboratory systems supplement for public health reports. In the public health agency accreditation process, it just so happens that I sit on the accreditation committee for PHAB, or the FAB, Public Health Accreditation Board. And I think there is the possibility, there certainly is the reality that laboratory services and the access to quality laboratory services is an essential component to public health agency accreditation. It might be able to move from something which is more of an informal connection to a more formal connection going forward. I would think that'd be nice for that to happen, but we're a ways from that happening.
Okay, thanks.
You're welcome.
Going back to the CLSS, I wanted to mention that since we have about 10 years worth of data, we're trying to do some data visualization here at APHL, and if you're going to be at the annual meeting, data visualization will be featured at the APHL Experience booth on Tuesday around lunchtime. So I don't know the details of which surveys they're going to be featuring at that table, but I'm hoping the CLSS will be one of them, as well as some of the other major surveys that APHL does, like the all-hazards survey and maybe some influenza data. So I'm hoping that with more data, we'll be able to come up with maps and graphs and an easy way to communicate trends that we find in the CLSS data so that we can address any gaps that we have that are identified.
That's great.
Are there any other questions for Dr. Wilkie? Okay. Karen, are you on the line? Did you want to announce the next Quality Improvement Forum call?
Sure. Thank you all for participating today, and thanks, Bert. Always good to hear your voice.
Thank you.
Wanted to let everyone know that our next Quality Improvement Forum will be held on June 16th. Obviously, we'll send out some save the dates. But the topic of this one will be quality indicators. And some of the participants that attended the March QMS training have graciously volunteered to share some of what they learned that day and share about the quality indicators and best practices or lessons learned from some of the quality indicators they've used in their lab. So we're asking others to bring their stories as well. We'd like it to be a really interactive forum. And again, that's June 16th on quality indicators. Thank you. Oh, and if anybody wants to volunteer to present, the more the merrier. Just let Tina or I know. Thank you.
Thanks, Karen. All right, so if there aren't any other questions, we'll just wrap up this April call, and we will check back in June.
Thanks, everyone.
Thanks, Bert.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you.